probably wouldn't give us a big enough sample.
And those would be different businesses.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so you bring up a good point. I hate to say it, but I guarantee you that my business runs a lot more water than Angerman's. Okay, so where are you going to go? You say they're metered, small commercial metered, and you show 4,000 gallons. I see where it's going to be metered. So basically right now, with only three of them being metered, we're not, that rate's just going to go up just because we think that's where it should be at. Is that right? We're just going to put that rate up. What I'm asking is, you want to go to 5%. I agree with Mr. Mitchell and Steve here that a 5% is not, I just don't see it. I mean, 5% is $2. 22 cents, I think it is, 224 or something like that. So is that small commercial metered, is that also 5%, or is that just the rate that you came up with?
It would have to be 5% on non-metered, and okay. The metered would be this formula. So your any non-small or large would be, is the hospital metered?
No.
No.
So if we go to 10%, you're talking the commercial, small commercial go up 10%, large commercial go up 10%, is that what, is this whole thing 5% across the board?
No, it's not.
So large commercial is different than what, the only a small commercial and residential is the one you're talking 5%?
No. Small commercial is
just residential. Okay.
Small, if you want.
So where did you guys come up with the formula for the other ones, just based on the other towns?
Let me defer to them if I could.
Okay.
To answer your questions. Eeny, meeny, miny,
moe. There's a worksheet in there.
And also, Mayor, before... there needs to be the proper decorum, so none of the back and forth and throwing questions and comments back and forth. So.
Okay, so my question is, where did you come up with the formula for small commercial and large commercial? Is it based on other towns, or did you guys come up with your own formula?
Lee Burtis, 8.5 miles of Mobile Highway. I came up with the formula by looking at what is charged in other towns, and most of the money is made on the per 1,000 gallons above the base rate that the customer consumes. We prepared a graph with lines that showed our cost curve relative to kind of what the level of consumption would be for metered customers, and especially among the large commercial customers, that 1,000 gallon rate was significantly less than the other communities that I looked at. I was asked to include Ketchikan in there, but as the memo in your packet kind of explains, because they charge a flat annual fee and their processors consume a vastly different amount of water per year, it's not quite an apples to apples comparison. So in any event, long answer to your brief question, I came up with the rate structure based largely on relative comparisons to other communities in the region.
And if I may just answer the other question that was asked before. So there are, the 5% would not just be to the residential. It would be applied to residential rates as well as the commercial businesses that are not metered.
Oh, right.
So like your business, for example, Dave, and increments that you suggested.
I just use those as a...
Yeah, and if you've looked through the rate structure, you'll see that there's almost two pages worth of different types of businesses, and they have been assigned a rate based on the amount of water that is assumed that they use, because a restaurant uses a much different amount of water than an office building with two people in it. So those have been looked at, and they're structured as such. So it would be those unmetered businesses also that would receive the 5% increase.
Anything further for Lee or Robert? Thank you. Any further discussion?
Mr. Mayor, if I could. So would you like us to bring back a draft ordinance at this point?
I think that's where the sin would be appropriate.
Okay.
Looking at.
But more than the 5%, we need to look at it a little bit closer as far, okay.
Any further discussion on this? That concludes unfinished business, new business. 13A, approval of the 2017-18 annual budget for the Wrangell Medical Center.
Move to approve the Wrangell Medical Center's annual fiscal year 2017 and 18 budget as presented.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Go ahead.
Could Mr. Ryan come forward?
Sure. If you have a question for him, sure.
I think you have to state your name and your address.
Mark Rang, mile marker 5.1, Zamobia.
We just need to know where to come with the pitchforks and torches and everything later after the meeting.
What's the address on the hill for your place?
So the general, you know, one of the principles here is it reflects a 10% increase across the line. And I understand wanting to stay within that usual and customary of what commercial insurance carriers are willing to pay. Is that realistic? Like, I mean, I'm worried about that in terms of where are we going to be able to sustain that? And given kind of trends that you're seeing, is that what's going on elsewhere?
To be honest with you, we have Devin Brown back in January, did a charge master review. We hadn't raised our prices for a number of years.
Okay.
And back in January, got a hospital board approval to raise our rates, at least keep with the Medicare was paying at the lower 48. Because we've been leaving a lot of money on the table for a significant amount of years, which is obviously cutting into our reserves. And so by raising our rates at that point in time, we started to see some gains in what Medicare and Medicaid was paying us. And then obviously, commercial insurance always wants, you know, some sort of discount. So the principle is that you always want to be above and beyond what Medicare and Medicaid will pay you so that you're always above that. Because what happens when you do your charge at the end of the, your cost report at the end of the year, they're going to pay you the lesser of two. They're going to pay you either your chart, what your cost of doing business, or what you're charging. If you're charging less than what it costs to do business, that's what they're going to pay you. And so you always want to be charging more than what it actually costs.
I guess my concern for the community is that If I come in, I have had it where I know myself, I have exceeded the usual and customary and had to make up the difference because it was higher than what my insurance carrier would cover. And if it's, I appreciate that we want to maximize those dollars, and I view it kind of as part of the penance for having a hospital here that's critical access hospital, but probably we wouldn't have a hospital if we weren't a critical access hospital. But I'm just hoping to keep it realistic for community members who do have insurance, and that we're not winding up having, because it's a catch-22, pretty soon we can only see Medicaid and Medicare people because anybody with insurance can go somewhere else and get it done cheaper. That's one of my concerns.
But between Medicare and Medicaid, it counts for about 78% of my business currently. And so that's the other 22%.
I keep asking for Medicare, and I guess I'm too young, but but there is a percentage of the population who are insured,
yes,
that have to make up that difference.
Yeah. Keep in mind, we're not the only facility across the country that's raising the rates on an annual basis. Our challenge is that we have not raised our rates for a number of years, so we're also trying to play catch up as well. So if we've been doing this in probably 4 years ago, even at 2%, we'd probably be sitting in the same spot we are now. But I think that's part of the challenge. Going back to what you guys were talking about,
I appreciate it.
Keeping the reserves available.
Okay, that was the only thing that I had a question on.
Go ahead.
Is the budget, you have a 9 up here. I suppose that's 9 long-term care patients?
No, that was actually a part of the formula that we were using when we were doing our calculation. And so if you remove the 9 from the spreadsheet, you lost all your data. So that's why it's saved there.
Oh, okay. But what is the budget based on? How many long-term care patients? Do you have a...
We have our 14 licensed for 14 beds. We budget for about 96-95% occupancy because
okay.
We've been pretty good. We've actually got a waiting list, to be honest with you, Betty. So realistically, you cannot budget for 100% because you have change. You know, we have change residency every so often. You get people to discharge for various reasons, or they get admitted to the hospital, and during that time, you can't collect. So, but we've been the past couple of years, we've been averaging about 95%.
Who
Okay. And then there's a decline in total discounts. What does that mean from the projected 2017 to the FY 2018? 1.4 million, and then it's budgeted for next year 2.3. Total discounts.
I'm Doran Hammett, the CFO. Let me get on the. Are you talking about the 2.3 million in the total discounts?
Correct. Uh huh.
And we project that we'll end the current year at 1.4 million, so that's an increase in the discounts. Well, the reason for that is if you looked at the numbers, you would see that we're projecting about a $1.3 million increase in the total charges, but when you look at the net patient revenue, it's only about a $300,000 increase, because we recognize when we raise our prices by 10%,
right,
Medicare's not going to pay us anymore, Medicaid's not going to pay us anymore, and you might get something. Most of that increase goes back through the discounts, because you're not going to get paid for most of that money.
Through the insurance companies,
yeah,
correct?
Primarily, like you know, Robert said, 78% of our business is Medicare and Medicaid. I can raise my prices all I want to on Medicare and Medicaid, those charges, but they're not going to pay me anymore. So even though the overall prices went up of $1.3 million, the net that we hope to get from that might be about $300,000. So the discounts, these are discounts that we have to provide to our insurance carriers and Medicare and Medicaid.
Right.
They may be discounts also. We have a pretty generous financial assistance policy. If you have people who are under certain levels of income based on federal poverty levels, they get up to 100% discount. And we have patients who I come across my desk routinely because of their financial situations to get 100% write-off, and that's part of that number.
Okay, so you anticipate it going up then?
I would anticipate it
because of
going up,
primarily because of raising rates. Is that correct?
I would anticipate, yes.
Okay.
You know, if someone gets 100% write-off and I raise the prices 10%, then it's just going to be a bigger write-off.
Okay, I understand that. And then purchase services is about cut in half.
If you notice on salaries is up considerably.
I noticed that.
And the purchase services are down. What we've done is we've budgeted a fully staffed model. In other words, having 100% full-time people who live in Wrangell employees. And by making that projection, we anticipate that the cost in purchase services for agency staffing will go down. As a matter of fact, we calculate that you save about 25% by having a full-time Wrangell employee rather than an agency staff person. So if I'm going to raise my salaries to anticipate being fully staffed, then I would have to take off the purchase services what it would cost me to hire someone to come from the lower four.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
That's a very good thing if we can meet that. Currently, I think we are currently fully staffed on nursing, and that is obviously where the biggest dollars are spent on agency staffing.
And then my last question, if I may, the cash flow is really lean, isn't it? Does that concern you?
It does concern me. Unfortunately, for a critical access hospital, budgeting really is not that difficult because particularly here, because you've got what you've got, and
right. You're
going to get what you're going to get. So you just mainly have to, as a facility, and I've pushed this with the staff both here and in Petersburg to control cost. If I can, if you can save $100, that's $100 to the bottom line, that I would have to have $1,000 in your revenue to get that same. So yeah, the cash flow does concern me. We are doing a number of things in our billing, in our collections, making sure our cost, there were some areas that we weren't even charging for after the analysis was done that we are now charging for. So it's about making sure you're billing for everything efficiently and that you're controlling your cost. But it will always be a lean operation. I've seen very few. I work for 15 different hospitals in the last 8 years across the country. You're fortunate. I've seen some in much more dire circumstances, but you've got a microcosm here that you have the patients you're going to have, and with Medicare now going to take out 5% of our budget, Medicare not giving us cost of living increases on our long-term care. If when it comes to a rebasing year, now Petersburg is scheduled for rebasing in 2018, and they've said, no, we're not going to rebase you, so they'll have to stay at the same rate that was based on 2014 cost through 2023. And we will be looking at that, too. So it's going to continue to be a very, very lean operation at best.
If I may add to that, that was part of the reason we needed to raise our prices, because right now that $30,000 that you're asking about is based on what currently Medicare and Medicaid's paying us, right? So if we raise our rates, then we're anticipating we're going to get some of that, but we don't know what that is, because again, we didn't realize we were even charging what the lower 48 was going to for Medicare. So it's possible that our profit margin should be better than that, but again, we can't budget for something we don't have.
On average, what is the rate of bill charges that you get from Medicare and Medicaid? Can you put a percentage to it? Do you get 50% of bill charges, or?
It varies, and they've got their own calculation, to be honest with you. Because what Medicare does, for example, is they look at your overall costs, and they figure, okay, 27% of your business is Medicare, given a certain, and say inpatient. And so, therefore, they'll adjust their rates, give or take. And that's why, if you always notice, Becky's been to a few of our hospital meetings where, we'll make money, and 6 months later, they want some of it back, because they're always constantly looking at that. Yeah. Medicaid, on the other hand, will set a flat rate for our inpatients, regardless of what the acuity is. If they can come in with a rule out pneumonia, and it's the same cost per day that we get if there was ruling out an MI or something along that line. It's a flat rate that they pay us. But they do, Medicaid is paying us 100% on our outpatient charges, so regardless of what we're charging currently, they do give us 100% on that. But Medicare, again, they base it on percentage of your business that they're paying on. It's not like retail where you can do a markup.
You're not having sales on rollout pneumonia? Just out of curiosity, what are you guys looking for your reserve? Like, how many months reserve do you try to have at any given time? What do you?
Well, currently, as of the end of April, we had a 30-day cash reserve, which at the beginning of the fiscal year in July, it was a little over 17 days. So it has improved. A lot of that improvement came from our efficiencies in accounts receivable. Our accounts receivable is down about $400,000 since the beginning of the year. So those days cash have grown from about 17.6 to 30 as of the end of the last month, and it's held pretty steady.
Where would you say a small CAH in Alaska should be sitting comfortably at?
I would start getting comfortable at about 100 days.
Okay. Would it be prudent to have some kind of early warning system for the assembly that if it starts to get down to a certain level? I'm just throwing this out there. Because I think everybody in the hospital is an important thing, and we want to make sure that we're able to be there. I know we have a $500,000 line of credit, and that you've used some of that.
We've got about $30,000 balance over there.
Okay, great. So there is some, you have some ability to access that line of credit, and if things are getting bad. Okay, good.
$500,000.
I thank you for getting it back so quickly.
$500,000 would be equivalent to about 20 days. It's about $25,000,
$26,000. So that gives us a little bit of a buffer there.
It gives you a little bit of a buffer, yes.
Okay.
My intent with that reserve that you guys have allowed us with that line of credit was to, the worst case scenario, allow that for payroll, and the operations to maintain our own.
Well,
I was just going to respond to Steve. We've set up the liaison, and by doing that, I've come and I've told you what the cash flow has been every time. And I think because the way the meetings are offset, your board meeting versus this meeting, we get regular reports. I mean, we may not know within 2 weeks, but it's pretty regular. that they give a, you know, they talk about cash flow every time at their meeting. So
part of the financial statement package is a cash flow report that shows the beginning of the year and the end of the current month. So you get, that's available every month.
And hopefully you'll come back to us fairly soon, as soon as you know the results of the feasibility study for the new hospital. So, yeah, I know it's off topic a little bit.
We did a workshop, you know, a couple months ago with that direction I got from the assembly and from the hospital board. Financial feasibility, we broke that down into two phases to save a little bit of money. One was to get an idea of what we could, as a hospital, with our current operations, what we can borrow. And then the second phase was after the discussion with, you know, afterwards, determine whether we go with the second phase, which is more in-depth work that the USDA would probably require in order to do a loan. The other aspect of the workshop was the concept design with the architect. So with that said, I've currently gotten back the information from BDO, which did the financial feasibility study. What we have not gotten back is what it's going to cost given the concept design from the architect yet. They're still working. We've been negotiating back and forth on some space and some issues and stuff. So we haven't gotten that back. I will share with the assembly, though, that the financial feasibility study said that given our current situation where we're at, and keep in mind that we've had some financial hard times here, that they said that we're comfortable because of depreciation and interest and the way all that works, is that the hospital operates currently, we could probably borrow between $20 and $21 million.
Is that with your current certificate of need? Or would you expand your certificate of need to include more beds?
Actually, it would decrease that. I think we were licensed for 22 for nursing home. There's just no way I could fill that, to be honest with you. So we were budgeting on a long-term care beds of 18.
18. Okay. And currently we have how many beds?
We've got 14. We've got a waiting list. I think I shared with you guys earlier. So I anticipate, and with a certificate of need, with any long-term care licensure, you have to maintain an 85% occupancy, and if you don't drop below that for an extended period of time, they take away beds from you because they base your cost, you know, they divvy it up. So for example, if I got 14 residents and it's cost me so much, they divide that cost over 14. If I drop down to 30, you know, down to 10, then they divide that cost, and somebody, you know, they realize they're paying you more per day for their residents. So they want you to maintain an occupancy rate at least 85%.
Anything further? Thank you.
Yeah. So finish up your question real quick. Once we get that information from the architectural design, I'll work with Kim and stuff to work on, get another workshop to do another planning study with the people.
Sounds good.
Any further discussion? Vogel, please.
Assembly members Persunka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13B, discussion and possible action to create a two-tier path towards a water plant replacement or modification.
So I asked for this to be put on. What I'm looking for is I want to, at the end of the planning process that we're going through with the USDA, we're going to wind up with a number, and I always like to know as compared to what. So if we move forward, put down one path, which is full replacement, which may be the best option, I don't know. But if we move down that one path and we haven't on a secondary path looked at our other options, we may discover that that path isn't right for us. And then we would have to we'd either be forced into a course of action, which we don't want to be, or we may then have to back up, punt, and wait another 6, 7, 8, 9 months to come up with a second course of action, which would push us possibly through, you know, another season or two getting ready. So what I would like us to do is to have the city, and they're doing some of this already, but I would like us to be looking at things from the standpoint of determining some raw numbers. Because right now we know that our peak water consumption is in the summer for a course of 2 to 3 months. That's our peak. We don't exceed that. So for 2 to 3 months, we can't produce enough water for the community. But what is it, you know, what is that margin, number one? What is that amount? What is the margin of difference between the filters working adequately and not adequately? So then if we apply, we replace the sand, dredge the reservoir, do a roughing filter, and modify the building, now what is our peak ability? Then if we add in water meters and we decrease the demand, and it, say it's 30%, now what is that number? Because my guess is we decrease our demand, increase our capacity to produce and store water, because that's another issue that we have, we'll come up with this new ratio. And then we can take and apply that to our numbers from the USDA, because that is not a free show. That is going to cost us. We are going to borrow a chunk of that money, so there's going to be financing charges and our share of reimbursing the USDA for whatever we wind up with. So there will be a cost to the consumer. And then we can take a look at the two numbers and say, we may find out that not replacing the plant is not an option. We just don't have, it may not work out. But I would rather us know that when our numbers start to roll in, that we have good numbers on both sides. Because right now, what I don't want to wind up with is a stranded asset that, you know, we can produce all this water, but we have no money left to deal with our reservoir. Because that is going to be another issue at some point. So we can wind up having a huge rate increase and have to modify the reservoirs. So that, it's not that I'm trying to lock us into one or the other, but I'd just like to have a good understanding of what our options are. So that come, let's say, January, and when numbers roll in, we can say it's plan A, we're moving forward with plan A, or a combination of the two, I don't know. But it would sure be nice not to back ourselves up to April and then not be able to do something prior to the summer.
And if I could just, and you also forgot a future growth.
Absolutely.
We have to, we can't forget that. So I understand what you're saying. I sort of think we're going along that route. I think we're trying to do a two-tier plan. We're trying to revamp our current water treatment facility and then look at a different design. And I think we're doing that. I don't know if we can get it done by January. It's a very complicated thing. And I mean, we've got, we've just read about the pipe from one reservoir for a shutoff to the other reservoir, and I don't know if EPA still has, do we have that permit cleared with EPA or for the wetlands permit, or is that up in the air? I believe it's
with
up in the air.
With the Corps of Engineers, we will have to pursue that, yes.
Right, yeah.
I think what I'm trying to prevent us from happening is that if the DEC, I want us to have our ducks in the row for looking at doing something within the same footprint, but at least to understand the costs of doing something in the same footprint. Because in many ways, if we move forward and we're just, we're sort of trying to band-aid this thing together, you know, because here we are, I'm throwing out ideas like buy $1 million worth of sand. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Well, we don't know if that's a good idea. And so I would much rather us have some sort of things in the works that may be able to help us get through. Because this new plant, in my understanding, is 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years down the road. Mm-hmm. So that's another factor for me.
But you're like me. You want hard facts, you want numbers, and you want to see a chart. And I don't think we'll ever get to that point where we can have hard, fast numbers. I think the best we can do is wait for the engineers to tell us what the best option would be for our quality of water coming into the plant.
Well, that's one piece of it, but there's other pieces that we need to understand. We need to do a 5-year look backwards and say, what happened? Why did we not make that production last year? What were the factors?
Yeah.
Will those factors be recreated? But moving forward, I just would like us to have something else in the hopper besides the hope that we get a nice loan from USDA.
Let's reduce the discussions backwards and forth. There's other people that would like to, other assembly members would like to join in.
I think that we are doing what we can to have those answers, Steve, but I don't know that we have, without doing expanding that contract, the either the dedicated or the qualified engineers to actually give us all those pieces and all those numbers to either decide to maintain or improve what we have or buy a new one. I think it's costly to do that, and we've already taxed our water plant people to where we've hired, what, 5 new ones or 4 new ones that I read. But anyway, I wonder if, I'm kind of with Patty, that what we're doing is moving in that direction, but until we find out what our current contract is with the engineers, what the answers are, then maybe we need to send them off in another direction. But I don't know with our current staffing, and I think maybe Amber might have something to help with that conversation.
Hi, I would just offer that a lot of what you all are talking about has been looked at by the engineers. Oh, I'm sorry, Amber Allenhead, 11 Mile, Smoke Highway. So the preliminary engineering report that we did pay them to do, that is all in here. It's been made available for you for some time. I would encourage you to read it. It tells us what that other option would look like as far as improving our existing plant. What are those pieces that would need to happen? What does that look like? There are costs involved in that as well in here. So that has been done.
Great. I will look forward to rifling through it.
Please read it. And so these are things that...
When was this done, Amber?
Pardon me?
When was this done?
The initial draft came out in March.
Okay.
But I will say, though, that a lot of that was also presented to some degree, a lesser degree, when we moved forward and made the decision to perform the pilot testing with the DAC on it. So this is just an expanded version of that. So that was a year and a half ago also. And that report was made available as well. So take a peek at those. I think you'll get some of the answers that you're asking right now, just as an initial start.
Okay. Amber, I'm with Steve, and I want to keep our options open, but I don't think we have entirely looked at supplementing that 3-month period with alternatives yet, and the wells would be one of those alternatives. I guess my biggest fear is that we're going to go down this path of a $7-9 million water plant, and the town shrinks, and the water rates quadruple or more, and there's nobody left to pay the bills. So if it's not needed, I have a problem with spending a great deal of money that we can't afford to spend. Now, again, if it is, and we can get this, and we get the grants, and I mean it's feasible to do it, by all means. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we do need to keep our options open. We need to look at everything.
I think there's, even minor things, small things that can be done to improve things, and even the little things that. Not very costly that can be done that can improve things. And we need to know what those are so we can proceed with them.
The other thing I was going to say is that this water plant will only create so many gallons per day. I don't care whether they've got new sands in it, no matter what we do to it, we can only produce so many a day. Now, we can produce it faster in a given day, but still, we are limited by the gallons, by the structure, by the plant, and we can only produce so much a day. But can we figure out a way to get by for 3 months versus a whole year? If we were booming and people were moving in here left and right, I'd be first in line and say, let's build it. But I'm not sure with the state's economic situation and the decrease in population throughout the rest of the state that that isn't going to come home to roost in Wrangell as well.
I encourage you to read this, just start with that. You'll get some of those answers. Just at least understanding what those added capacities to the existing plant would look like. And then what does that dollar figure look like attached to it?
Carol, do we have that on our computer online? Can we get to access
it? It's on the website, yes. If you go under Public Works, we have it on the website.
And I don't want to get into a long conversation about this because I don't probably have all the answers that you would ask questions of, but there could also be a water quality issue as EPA and DEC change their regulations that we may not be able to meet in the future. So that would be another concern, just looking at the future.
And what options have we reviewed to meet those? Because I understand that that's a potential, but what I'd like to hear about is potential solutions to not, I don't want to be hamstrung into one certain direction. I want to, if there's a problem and there's absolutely no way around it and there's no filter you can buy or ozonation you can create, I get it. But I have a hard time believing that every plant that's old in Southeast Alaska is going to have to be torn out and replaced because of this stuff coming down. So I guess what I'm saying is I appreciate that and I want us to have clean water, but I would imagine there's multiple solutions to a lot of these problems and I really want to review all of them. I'll start with that and have a good look at it and go through it and see if it answers the questions that I have. Okay, I will take a look at it.
Any further discussion? And I assume other than the comments made, no action to be taken at this time. That's the end of new business. Item 14, attorney's file, we have none. Item 15, executive session 15A, approval of the new borough manager's contract.
I move that pursuant to Alaska Statutes 44.62.310C, Section 2, that we recess into executive session to discuss matters that may tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, specifically the discussion of the new borough manager's contract, and invite our city manager into the session.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Yes. Sorry. Full vote, please.
Assembly members Rooney?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Sasunka?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. We're recessed into executive session at 8:05 p.m.